Good day, and welcome to the Laurentian Bank Second Quarter Results Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded, and at this time I would like to turn the conference over to Susan Cohen, Director, Investor Relations. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Our press release was issued today on Canada Newswire and can be found on our website. This afternoon's overview of our results will be provided by François Desjardins, President and CEO, and François Laurin, CFO. The presentation that they will be referring to can also be found on our website in the Investor section. Other members of our senior management team are joining us today to answer questions following our prepared remarks. During this conference call, forward-looking statements may be made, and it's possible that actual results may differ materially from those projected in such statements. For the complete cautionary note regarding forward-looking statements, please refer to our press release or to slide 2 of the presentation. I am now pleased to turn the call over to François Desjardins.
Thank you, Susan, and good afternoon, everyone. Laurentian Bank posted strong core earnings for the second quarter of 2016 as adjusted net income increased by 10% and adjusted EPS increased by 6% compared to last year. Adjusted return on equity reached 12.8%, an improvement of 70 basis points from a year earlier. This quarter's results are a combination of cost control efforts, lower loan loss provisions, and continued growth in key business areas. Indeed, loans to business customers reached $8.4 billion at the end of the second quarter, 12% higher than a year earlier, fueled by another good quarter in commercial loans, which increased by 17%. Mortgage loans originated through B2B Bank independent advisors and brokers reached $6.7 billion, a 46% increase. Overall, we are pleased with this progress and are diligently working towards our 2019 financial goals. Furthermore, during our first quarter conference call, we made the promise to provide regular updates on the progress of our transformation. We are pleased to report that after 6 months, many initiatives have gotten underway, and even if we are still in the early stages, progress can be seen in many areas. This quarter, I thought I could give more color on two of these items since we have reached important milestones. Rebuilding a proper account management platform, our second critical path element, is key to our transformation. After completing the RFP process and the fit gap analysis, we have selected Temenos, a market-leading software provider in the banking and finance industry, to replace our core banking system. This best-in-class solution will facilitate faster time-to-market for products and services and delivery of a superior customer experience in a fast-moving digital world. We have also partnered with Deloitte, whose long-standing and proven expertise in implementations will be a significant contributor to the success of this project. Our CIO, Deborah Rose, and her team are now entering the implementation phase of this 4-year journey. Involving intense work from various teams of experts, this first phase consists of the delivery of the initial system build. Currently planned for the end of the calendar year of 2017, this portion of the project will serve as the backbone for the remaining system development. We are enthusiastic about this project, as it will allow us to scale up to meet the needs of our customers, in addition to supporting future compliance and regulatory changes. We've also made important progress on reducing expenses, as well as the size and scope of corporate functions, our eighth critical path element. Indeed, we have completed the needs analysis, request for proposal, selected a final site, and are in advanced discussions to lease 9 floors in a downtown office building, which will become our Montreal head office in October 2018. Relocating all Montreal-based corporate team members that are currently dispersed in 8 different locations into one downtown building will reduce our footprint by more than 35% and save approximately $5 million a year. In addition, this new space will be built to modern standards, increasing efficiencies, fostering teamwork, allowing collaboration, and improving the overall work environment. Once the lease is signed, we will disclose the location and the investment that we will be making in the Quebec economy. All in all, the second quarter has seen progress on many fronts, both from business growth and transformation plan perspective. We will continue to update you as milestones are reached every quarter. We have also reached another important milestone, founding at the Montreal City and District Savings Bank on May 26, 1846, we are now celebrating our 170th anniversary. Our new mission of helping our clients improve their financial health has given us the opportunity to reconnect with the values of our past. And our new plan, combined with the implementation of modern technology, is allowing us to build the bank of tomorrow. Lastly, I'm happy to report that given the good core earnings of the bank and the progress that we've seen on the transformation plan, that will further propel profitability, the Board of Directors approved an increase in the quarterly dividend of 2 cents to 60 cents per share. I will now call upon François Larrain to provide a more in-depth review of our second quarter of 2016 financial performance. François?
Thank you, François. Good afternoon, everyone. I would like to begin by turning to slide 12, which highlights the bank's strong financial performance in the second quarter of 2016. Adjusted net income totaled $46.7 million, and adjusted EPS were $1.46, 10% and 6% higher than a year earlier. The differential between growth rates reflects the additional 1.4 million common shares outstanding compared to last year. Adjusted ROE at 12.8% improved from 12.1% in the second quarter of 2015. Moving to the drivers of our performance presented on slide 13, total revenue for the second quarter of 2016 increased by 3% to $226.8 million compared to a year earlier. Net interest income growth of 4% was driven by strong loan growth. Other income was relatively unchanged. Net interest margin, shown on slide 14, was 1.71%. This was 13 basis points lower than a year earlier. About half of the decline was due to growth in the lower-yielding but lower-risk residential mortgage loan portfolio. The other half was due to the low-interest rate environment, higher funding costs, and higher liquid assets held throughout the quarter. On a sequential basis, NIM declined by 7 basis points. This was mainly due to the low-interest rate environment, higher funding costs, and the contraction in the prime BA spread within a very competitive market. We expect additional modest pressure on NIM over the next few quarters as historically low rates are projected to persist. However, we are pleased with the growth in average earning assets of 11% year-over-year and 2% quarter-over-quarter, which was driven by our targeted loan growth, notably B2B bank mortgage loans and loans to business customers. This growth strengthens the bank's market position, but most importantly, it fuels net interest income and improves ROE. Other income, as presented on slide 15, was relatively stable year over year at $83.4 million. Income from brokerage operations rose 21%, reflecting good results from institutional business activities, and lending fees increased by 11%, reflecting strong growth in commercial loans. However, this was partially offset by lower income from treasury and financial market operations, reflecting higher net gains on securities in the second quarter of 2015. Slide 16 highlights non-interest expenses, which are very well controlled and on an adjusted basis, increased by 1% year over year. The adjusted efficiency ratio in the second quarter was 70.6%, an improvement of 130 basis points year over year. Contributing to this improvement was an increase in net interest income combined with well-contained expenses. We continue to work towards achieving a target efficiency ratio of below 68% by 2019. Slide 17 presents the CET1 ratio of 7.9% at the end of the second quarter, compared to 7.7% at the end of the first quarter. The improvement was due to several factors, including proactive risk-weighted asset management and an increase in the value of available-for-sale securities portfolio. It is noteworthy that internally generated capital as a result of the bank profitability supported business growth. Slide 18 highlights our well-diversified sources of funds. Given our strong growth in mortgage loans, we are optimizing our securitization activities, a source of funding that we plan to use more of. To this end, in the second quarter of 2016, debt from securitizations increased by 13% from a year earlier. As well, personal term deposits increased by 19%, largely driven by higher term deposits at B2B Bank. The bank continues to have a strong liquidity position. Turning to slide 20, credit quality remained solid. The provision for credit losses decreased by $2.3 million from the second quarter of 2015 to $5.8 million and remained at cyclically low levels. Sequentially, the provision declined by $3.4 million. A regular review of the bank's collective allowance models resulted in $2.7 million of net favorable adjustments to the provision, which reflects the continued good underlying quality of the loan portfolios. The loss ratio was 8 basis points in the second quarter of 2016, compared to 12 basis points in a year ago and in the prior period. Despite this low ratio, Laurentian Bank remains conservatively provisioned, as shown on slide 22. The total allowance covers the bank annual provision for loan losses by a multiple of 3.4 times at the end of the second quarter of 2016 and compares favorably to the industry. Over the medium term, a loss ratio of 8 basis points is not sustainable and will move higher as our business mix changes. Nonetheless, with our current portfolio mix, conservative provisioning, and disciplined education process, we expect that the loss ratio will remain well below other Canadian banks. Turning to slide 14, after 6 months, we are making good progress towards meeting our midterm financial objectives. With respect to the bank's key growth drivers, we are advancing towards most of our 2019 targets. To conclude, we are very pleased with the strong core earnings performance in the second quarter of 2016 and the progress that we're making on our transformation plan. Thank you for your attention, and we'll now turn the call back to Susan.
At this point, I would like to turn the call over to the conference operator for the question and answer session. Angel?
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And our first question will come from the line of Meny Grauman of Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I just had a question on risk-weighted assets. You talk about proactive management when it comes to risk-weighted assets. Could you just give a little bit more detail on exactly what you're doing here and the outlook, how repeatable it is going forward in terms of the steps you're taking?
Good afternoon, Manny. Thank you for the question. Basically, every item that affects both capital and RWA are looking proactively. Instances of that is like insurance on our mortgage portfolios and other items like that we undertook in the last quarter.
Okay, and how much more, you know, in terms of sort of easier things to do or low-hanging fruit, how much more opportunity do you think you have in terms of those kinds of levers?
Well, basically, we're comfortable at 7.9%, remembering that we're under the standard approach, which is more penalizing on the capital ratio. So volume growth We expect the volume growth generated supported will be supported internally by the capital provided by the growth, and we believe that we can accomplish our strategic plan. So it's nothing specific, but as I said, all items affecting capital is looked at regularly.
Okay. And if I could just follow up on the funding costs, you note that higher funding costs were a part of the reason why we've seen so much margin pressure on a year-over-year basis. And I'm just wondering, as you go through your transformation and focusing on taking funding costs down, how would you assess the progress so far? Or what stage are you at in terms of that process, and how satisfied are you that you're making some progress there?
One element, as we mentioned in the script, is the securitization. We've increased our efforts in securitization, and that's clearly one favorable element to reduce our funding costs going forward.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Thank you, sir.
And your next question will come from the line of Doug Young of Desjardins Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Just maybe continuing with that, on the net interest margins, you've had some deterioration, and obviously funding costs has been one of the issues. Just wondering, where do you think or where do you feel as you look out in your planning stages over the next year, year and a half, where do NIMs level out for Laurentian Bank?
Well, We it's difficult to make statements over a long period of time, but we feel it's still under pressure. But the biggest item that affected NIM was the fact that the new business is coming at lower margin than the previous business that's going out. But despite that, what we're focusing on is the increase in the net interest income and the increased ROE that comes with it. So it's not like we're worried about, we manage the NIM to grow the NII and the ROE.
And when you think of your business mix, obviously, again, residential mortgage growth has been quite significant. It's a lower yielding. You're comfortable just continuing with that pace of growth and growing that business relative to the other components of your business, which would, I guess, put further NIM compression?
François?
Okay. Well, we're comfortable with the growth. We have a plan to grow that business over 4 years by 50%. We don't plan to see that it's going to keep at the above 40% in the medium term. But we're very comfortable that this business grows profitably to increase NII and the ROE as well, Doug.
Okay. And then just wanted to go back to the PCLs, and I guess it's kind of a two-part question on the credit side. I mean, can you talk a little bit about the process you went through to come to the conclusion that you could release $2.7 million of collective provisions? I haven't seen that before, so I just wanted to get a little more detail. And then you mentioned PCL rate where it is isn't sustainable, and I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, what is a sustainable PCL given your mix of business? Is it more 15 basis points? Is it more 20 basis points? Any color would be helpful. Thank you.
I'll ask Christian Debrou, our SVP of Credit, to answer that question.
Okay, well, first of all, on the review of the collective allowance models, we conduct review of all the bank's risk models annually. For each model, we look at various parameters, including the actual default and losses incurred. Each year, we find that some of the models need to be adjusted on the plus or minus side on one or more parameters. This year's adjustment resulted in a net decrease of our collective provision of $2.7 million, less than 3% of our allowance for loan losses, an amount that is not deemed material. Even with the adjustment, our provisioning remains conservative. Our track record demonstrates that we have prudent underwriting. And remember, we don't have any direct exposure to the oil and gas industry. And our total exposure to Alberta is just limited to 5% of the bank's portfolio. So we felt very comfortable with those adjustments. In terms of is the 8 bps a normalized level for PCL, No, it's not a normal run rate. In addition to our model adjustment, we continue to benefit from favorable resolutions of workout loans, and we're benefiting as well from our prudent underwriting. In the medium term, a loss of 8 bits is not sustainable, and it will increase as our business mix changes.
I know others have talked more about ranges. Would you be comfortable giving a range of what a normal ratio would be, net of all the resolutions and the release of the collectives, if we back all that out, what a normal ratio might look like going forward?
Well, we don't provide quarterly guidance, and like I said, the 8 bits is not sustainable. It will increase as our portfolio changes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And your next question will come from the line of Sohrab Movahedi of BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks. I just wanted to stay with that line of question for a second and see, do you see possibility of further releases from your collective allowance given the growth is coming in the lower yielding but lower risk assets?
Again, Kirsten?
Well, we've reviewed our models. The next review is slated for next year unless we detect an anomaly in the performance of our models.
Okay, so when you think about the type of growth, maybe for one of the Francois, the type of growth you're experiencing is the lower growth. Presumably, it's less capital intensive as well. I mean, it's lower risk, growth, and presumably, therefore, it's less capital intensive. Should that help with the internal capital generation going forward?
Thank you, Francois.
Thank you for the question. Clearly, we're focusing on the net interest income and the ROE, and entering that growth of business, we generate enough to maintain our capital ratio. And because they're less risky, but they're still profitable, that's why the numbers add up to create value for our shareholders.
Oh, and sorry, and I wasn't suggesting that you're not creating value. I just wanted to see if there's if that remixing has potential of helping with the capital ratios under just normal course business operations or not. In other words, if you have less capital intensive, arguably less risky stuff should be less capital intensive, and therefore it should be a bit of a pressure relief, if you will, on your risk-weighted assets, no?
It does have less constraint on capital. You're right.
Okay. And then just one last question. I mean, obviously, you had thought about many things as before you came up with your transformation plan. Is the trajectory in spreads and NIMs and funding costs and all of that stuff, is this a net surprise to that transformation plan that you had contemplated, or is this more or less in line with what would have been implicit in the type of financial metrics that you had behind the transformation plan?
Thanks. That's a great question. No, there's no surprise here. When we talked about the economic environment that we are in a low interest rate environment. We are in an environment where different competition affects different products. And when we talked about our transformation plan, it was really twofold, right? So bringing the bank into the future with new technology and processes and addressing cost issues, mostly in retail bank, and looking at the relevancy of our offer, but also, just as important, working on the efficiency ratio and getting to an ROE and value to the shareholders. And that recipe between margin and capital and risk is something that we manage proactively to attain our 2019 goals.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from the line of Peter Rutledge of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Question on page 5 on the residential mortgage loan growth at B2B Bank, which is quite strong over the last year. And if you stretch back over 2 years, it's quite strong. The incremental loans you're putting on the book over the last year, so from going from $4.6 billion to $6.7 billion, how much of that, where is that coming from? What parts of the country?
Yeah. I'll ask Deborah Rose to answer that.
Okay. As far as the concentration across the country for those mortgages, I would say the largest proportion being Ontario, but we also have, you know, a healthy volume coming out of the BC region. We've recently launched mortgage sales in Quebec, so there is a healthy range across the country.
Okay. And that, I mean, the growth is impressive. How does, longer term, how do you think about credit risk, particularly in the uninsured mortgage portfolio? And where I'm going with the question is, you know, are you worried at all that you're lending out of footprint and that you might be at a bit of a disadvantage relative to peers that have, you know, established branch networks?
I'll ask Sandra Bruce to answer that question.
Well, I would say first point is in terms of our portfolio, we do have a very large proportion of our portfolio that is insured mortgages. So right off the bat, a good chunk of our portfolio is very secure. On the balance, we have a very low loan-to-value portfolio, so it gets us really comfortable as to the risk that we're undertaking. And as well, we're learning in as we develop. We've had good market intelligence. We feel very comfortable as to the markets where we're lending.
Okay. Couple of just other questions. Any comments or updates on the standardized approach to credit risk weighting?
I'll ask Susan Fitzman to answer that question.
Well, I think as you all know, there's a lot of uncertainty around all regulatory issues concerning capital at this point, be it the revised standard methodology that was published at the end of last year, as well as new principles for the advanced, if you will. They're not almost a Basel IV. So as it stands now, IRB is a key component of our transformation plan, and we have restarted. We are working on delivering the project, as we still feel it will put us on an equal playing field with the other banks competing for loans. The same pricing flexibility, and it's a good tool for managing risk in and of itself, but we're keeping very close to that uncertain environment of the regulations.
And then as you drove your CET1 up, I think you mentioned something about proactive risk-weighted asset management. Can you give us a little more color what you mean by that?
François?
The particular is to make sure that the balance between the new assets coming in, the capital required, and every item along the way that affects both the risk-weighted assets and the capital is analyzed and taken into account before we move forward. The major example this quarter was that brought basically 5 bps to the capital ratio is the insurance taken on the mortgages, a pool of mortgages. And obviously, we intend to tackle every item that affects capital from an asset going forward. So that's the most patent example this quarter. In other quarters, it might probably be something else.
So this quarter, you're saying you bought pool insurance on a block of mortgages, presumably,
yeah
non-CMHC, uninsured at
that
designation. And that drove 5 bps. And how much capacity do you have to, you know, take your uninsured mortgages right now and wrap them with insurance? I mean, how much capacity at the CMHC or Genworth is there to do that?
Oh, boy.
We can take it offline. But, yeah.
Yeah, I think we'll come back to you offline, Peter, on that one.
All right. Thank you very much.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And our next question will come from the line of Sumit Malhotra of Scotia Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the afternoon. Hi. First question is for Michelle, and looking specifically at the brokerage revenue in the quarter, one of the strongest results we've seen from Laurentian. I know it was there was certainly a pickup in investment banking or equity underwriting activity for all banks in Q2. Just wanted to get some flavor from you here. Was it specifically just you participated in more transactions and what was a better equity underwriting quarter, or was there more at work here in driving this number?
Hi, Summit. I think you partly answered the question. I'll just backtrack a bit. But the first quarter, as you well know, and we all know, was marked by very difficult environment conditions, high volatility, lower oil prices, and markets being under pressure combined for a very challenging environment, actually. And conversely, as you pointed out, the second quarter saw markedly improved conditions. Our trading activities picked up. Our underwriting volumes were up as well. So some of the Q2 improvement was an offset from pent-up in the first quarter. Now, as well, I'd have to say that the second quarter seasonally is more active for us. So therefore, I'd be inclined to look more at the first half of the year as reflective than individual quarters, Summit. Just to note maybe that by nature we're conservative and we do operate prudently. So I think that partly explains why we recouped so quickly in the second quarter when markets reopened and were able to... deliver a bit more underwriting and trading volumes.
And this is maybe a bit of a strange one, but I'll try it anyway. Do you feel that Laurentian's syndicate positions in some of these equity underwriting deals or transactions, have you, from the way you measure it, have you felt that your participation in these transactions has improved given the increased focus and emphasis you've been putting on this business?
I kind of like the question, Summit. What I'd say, and I'm not going to go into specific numbers, but there's a big change in the backdrop of the industry and capital markets, and we've seen some of the benefits of it. Over the years, our syndicated allotments and our trading volumes in the secondary markets have sort of moved up year in, year out, and this year is no exception. And what's happening in the industry as a whole, I would say generally, favors your business model of the long-term growth approach that we're working on. So we remain prudent, but we're seeing some of the benefits. And if I can just do a small pitch, our annual small cap conference doesn't hurt either.
And now I'm going to jump off this, but can I just say when you are saying some of the changes in the industry, can I take that to mean that while you may be a smaller bank compared to your peers, you're still a bank which is a favorable position relative to some of the independents in Canada at this time?
Well, good brief, Summit. You've been taking a page off our playbook. What I say, Summit, though, it is true. We are the only bank in Canada that favors the small cap market, and we're basically competing against the banks in some areas and the independent players in other areas. And I think that clearly the investors and issuers alike appreciate dealing with the banks, so that favors us from one side. And from the other side, I think banks are a bit more careful in looking at the ROE on their capital. Foreign banks are more nimble and looking to sometimes, I would suggest, repatriate capital. So in all of that, we continue to move forward at the pace we've given ourselves and are benefiting from an environment that we don't control.
All right. Thank you for that. Let me go over to François Desjardins and let me try this one. You're a pretty straight shooter, so hopefully you'll be able to give this one to me straight. When you look at this quarter and the $1.46 in operating EPS or adjusted EPS that Laurentian calls Q2, so you show us a decent sized NIM decline and say there's likely more NIM pressure to come. Your PCL ratio is 7.5 basis points. You have, as Michelle just described in some detail, a pretty good quarter in terms of your brokerage contribution. Is $1.46 to you and what is actually a short quarter, which I think means more for Laurentian given your reliance on net interest income, is this a quarter that you feel is reflective of the bank's earnings power, or was it unusually good when you think about the run rate based on some of the drivers in Q2?
Well, I tried to be as straight a shooter as you want me to there, but the realities are is that we gave guidance on 4 years and on seven for a reason. This is a good quarter, and we'll take it. They're not going to all be winners, but over the next 4 years, what we had said in our plan is that we will make the bank relevant again in retail. That means cost reductions, working on the efficiency ratio, and working towards the ROE. In two quarters, if you look at the 12.8 that we have, technically someone would say that we're halfway there. I don't think that that is the case. But it does show that we're working towards an objective that is real and that we're committed to it. Some examples this quarter are, you know, on the transformation plan that I talked about a little bit earlier, but on relative costs, quarter over quarter, year over year, some great progress as well. So take that as a sign of positivity towards our four-year goals.
Oh, I hear you. I know every 90 days isn't going to be the only measuring stick, but it's certainly one that we get. So I wanted to get your take on how you view the moving parts. And the last one I'm going to have, and it's just because Francois, the CFO, brought it up a couple times, is just looking at how the loan growth translates into revenue and ROE. So if I've got my numbers right here, the net interest income increase year over year was 4%, which is not bad, but certainly when you look at it in the context of 12% loan growth over that time, obviously you're not matching the loan growth even halfway on the revenue side. So how do you view this in terms of the addition to the business? If you're not getting the complete bang for your buck in revenue that you're getting in loans, at least on net interest income, are there other benefits that the bank is deriving through fee income, or is this just we get the customer in the door and the benefits will follow? I'm not sure if I'm explaining that well, but I hopefully you have an idea where I'm getting at.
Well, let me give you take a crack at answering it. You know, when we're looking at the business coming in, our first thought is it generating value to the shareholders, and that means that it has to have a profitability more than the current profitability that we have now, which is around 12 and a half or whatever, and it has to be generating capital. And as long as that is true, we are slowly but surely increasing the net interest income, and because some of the business that's coming in has less impact on capital, then the ROE goes up, which is the point. So, you know, taken individually, if you look at NIM versus NIE versus growth versus ROE, you know, one of the things that we said in our Investor Day is, you know, we want to get the ROE back to levels that we think are expected from the shareholders. And therefore, we have to create a recipe that makes that happen. And for that to happen, the growth has to be profitable.
Thanks. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. You're
welcome.
That concludes today's question and answer session. Ms. Cohen, at this time, I will turn the conference back to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you for joining us today. Should you have any further questions, our contact information is included at the end of the presentation. We look forward to speaking with you again at our third quarter conference call on August 31st. Good day.
Thank you.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.